Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
In January, my wife and I took our family to Cuba. Because our daughter was getting married there. And we were meeting our son-in-law for the first time a few days before the wedding. You thought this was a love story, but this was actually a white knuckle tale of parental suspense. Last year, my daughter did a semester abroad and studied at the University of Havana. And while she was in that city, she met a young Cuban gentleman named Malcolm, and they quickly became inseparable. And when the semester was over, she finagled her way onto a semester at sea program and endured 4 or 5 weeks of horrible seasickness for the payoff of docking back in Cuba, this time on the other side of the island in Santiago, where Malcolm came and met her. And then that summer, she went back on her own. And somewhere along the way, I got the sweetest phone call from her. And she said, "Dad, you know, I have something to tell you. You know, Malcolm is my love. And we want to be together. And really, to make that happen, we have to think about getting married pretty soon." And my reaction was that I was so happy for her. I could hear the joy in her voice, and that was wonderful. There was also a voice in the back of my head, genetically encoded. I think it was a couple of slow years ago that I referred to my mother as the commander of the emotional Death Star. And there was that voice going, "Oh, so young, how is that going to work? Is he going to be able to get a job in this country, even come into this country? Is she going to be able to work over there? Yada, yada, yada," you know? And it's taken me a lot of my adult life to realize that there's only one perk to being anxious, and that is that you get to grimly go, "Yeah, I was right about that." And as my wife has said many times to me, you can choose to be right or you can choose to be in a relationship. And nothing was more important to me than being in a relationship with my daughter. And I told her, "Look, we will do whatever it takes to help you make this happen." And so we hatched the plan of a winter break wedding where between the semesters of her senior year, our family was going to go over there, and a couple of her friends would be there as well. That was the plan. And as friends of mine and relatives heard about it, they would say, "Well, are you nervous about meeting him?" And I would say, "Look, you know, the important thing here is my daughter's happiness. She has a great moral compass, a strong judge. Of course I'm nervous! I'm going to be there in the middle of the airport, meeting him for the first time, trying to take his measure and look in his eye. And what if I see something? What if I see something that only a father can see? Some gleam of menace, some glint of opportunism. You know, I wasn't looking for love. I was looking for like. I was looking for a sigh of relief. You know, I'd seen all of those psycho thrillers from the early 90s. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, The Nanny from Hell, Single White Female, the Roommate from Hell, Pacific Heights, the Tenant from Hell. What if this was going to be Sour Mojito, the Cuban son-in-law from Hell? But I tried to table those nerves. I did pretty well until I was traveling there. And then I'm a bad traveler to begin with, but I think the nerves were surfacing, and I just started making mistakes left and right. Like on the flight to Mexico City while my family is sleeping, I think, hey, I'll fill out all the custom and immigration forms for us. And then we wait in the maddening long line only to be told that I've done it wrong. And we're shunted off to the side, you know, like we're in the penalty box and we've got to fix those there. A few hours later, the same airport, I am told I can't get on the plane because I have a stray mark on my Cuban visa. And I'm freaking out and running through the airport back to customer service to buy a new visa while my wife is pleading for them, please don't take off without my husband. So, you know, I was kind of rattled. We land in Havana, we make our way through immigration, we finally get our luggage, and I can see, you know, there it is, the last portal, and on the other side of this door where the guard is standing, I can see Malkin in the distance, and he's shouting with excitement to my daughter, and the guard, you know, lets my daughter through, lets my wife through, my daughter's friend, my son, and then stops me and points because there's a sticker that's been put on my suitcase. And she tells me I have to go over to this room on the side. There were three people in this room. There was an old woman. There was an attendant who was going through the woman's suitcase. And there was a second attendant just standing there. And anytime I caught her eye, she would point at me where I was standing and say, wait. And I didn't know how long I was going to have to wait for. After 40 minutes, I got a text from my daughter saying, everybody else has taken a cab to the apartment. Malkin and I are waiting for you. You know, I'm trying to figure it out. And I'm watching as the first attendant is taking each piece of clothing out of the suitcase and holding it up, which causes the old woman to start crying. And then they kind of barter, and it goes in one of two piles, which I assumed was either the keep or the confiscate pile. And at the rate that they're working and the size of the suitcase, I imagine I may be there for a week. But I'm also trying to figure out why. Why has this happened? And then it hits me. This was also winter break for my son, who was in his freshman year in New Orleans studying music. And right before we left for Cuba, he said, Dad, I got some equipment that I need to get back to school. He's got some cables for his electric guitar and a couple of sound and distortion pedals. And we decide, all right, we'll put them in a bag. We'll put the bag in one of our suitcases. We'll just take them with us. And then you can take them back to college with you. And when finally another attendant shows up and puts my suitcase on the table and takes out all my clothes and then pulls out this bag and puts all the equipment on the table, if I weren't so upset, I would burst out laughing because it all looked like bomb equipment. I mean, the pedal with its knobs and its jacks and its wires coming out, I mean, it was just like classic detonation material. And I text my daughter at this point, and I say, I'm in trouble. Can you get in here? And somehow she manages to sweet talk her way in. And as this attendant, grim-faced, is holding up one piece of equipment after another, we're launching into our bilingual bullshit routine because I'm kind of making up what everything might be used for, and she's quickly translating it into Spanish. And I'm saying, yeah, that cable is so if you're playing very quietly on the guitar, you know, everybody can hear it through the amplifier. That pedal is if you want the guitar to go wah, 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 you know. In the movie version of my life, this becomes a musical number, you know, where all these, you know, handsome young Cubans in colorful shirts come on and they're dancing around me and they're singing, you know, what does the pedal do? The pedal goes wah, wah. What does the pedal do? The pedal goes wah. But it was not a movie. But we made our way to the end of the ordeal. She accepted this explanation, threw all the equipment back in the suitcase, threw my clothes back in there, zipped it up. Finally, I get to go through the last portal. I'm a wreck. And there he is, And I'm supposed to, you know, whose measure I'm supposed to take. And basically all I can do at that point is take a nap. And he puts his arms around me for a hug and says, "I had no idea you were such a bad guy." And I loved him.